I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today and recognise their continuing connection to lands, waters and communities. We pay our respects to elders past and present.
Stocks fluctuate around fundamentals and you need to be aware of what's driving stock prices.
Hello and welcome to Take Stock, a new podcast by Future Generation. In this series, we get a backstage pass into the minds of leading fund managers and work out how and why they make the stock choices they do. I'm Caroline Gurney, the CEO of Future Generation. We're Australia's first listed investment group to deliver both social and investment returns. And so far, we've donated more than $75 million to not-for-profits that improve the lives of young Australians. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Matt Hoopt of Wilson Asset Management, or WAM as it's known. The team behind WAM actually created the Future Generation companies, and they continue to be huge support. In fact, Matt's just come on board as one of our pro bono fund managers, which means he will manage shareholder money for us without charging any management or performance fees. So Matt, welcome. And I presume that you knew that you were joining us and there's zero fees.
Yes, very much aware, Caroline. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you very much. So reporting season's come to an end now in Australia, and obviously you must be exhausted. But what are the main themes that have actually emerged?
I really think the clear theme from reporting season is really the focus on cost control. So, I mean, it sounds quite obvious going into a slowing environment, but the companies that did well on costs, their share prices really went on with it. And it's really just a function of, you know, good management, really, you know, addressing issues and taking proactive steps versus reactive management were really punished. So a lot of companies miss on, obviously, costs. And also another highlight was really around the CFO's roles within companies. Obviously, at low interest rates or zero interest rates, the focus of a good CFO was probably lost over that period. But with rising interest rates or higher interest rates, the role of a CFO has come back into focus, and you could really see the difference there. Good CFOs, extended tenure, locked in low interest rates, whereas the other ones, the not-so-good ones, really left companies exposed to those movements. So, I mean, they were two clear highlights from reporting season.
That's really interesting because, I mean, CFOs have always been a really important part of a company, but now for you to actually notice that the quality of the CFO actually reflects on how the company is doing.
I mean, I think the CFOs probably felt unloved for a period of time. Obviously, post-COVID, they were in focus, but, you know, we've lived in this environment of low interest rates or zero interest rates for, you know, well over a decade before the COVID issues. So, yeah, their role largely taken a back seat, but I'll tell you what, the focus this reporting season was huge on that interest line and how they've positioned themselves going forward.
So can you see that trend of CFOs now becoming CEOs as more of a rite of passage?
Well, it used to be the rite of passage. So, yeah, 100%. Anyone that's done well through this period, obviously their worth has gone up and, you know, they become a clear candidate.
So who were the winners and losers?
I think if we look at the banking sector, obviously it's a big part of the Australian stock market and the economy. They perform pretty well. Like, I think the risk within Australia was we were going to go with this big slowdown, there's going to be stress emerging through the households. That clearly has not happened yet, which is still, I find that a little bit staggering, but all the banks have very benign bad debts and their arrears are ticking up slightly, but there's really no signs of stress in the Australian economy. So I think the Australian banking sector probably did better than feared, and you've seen that in the share prices. The ones that suffered were under the government microscope. So obviously Woolworths, and you know they're in an ACCC review at the moment. You've had the energy sector, the gambling sector, anything hot on the government's heels, they suffered a lot. So I'd say that probably the clear standout for reporting season.
And generally, what's your market outlook for Australia for the rest of the year?
This changes day by day. So we are at a really critical path. Essentially, if we paint the backdrop, the share market has risen on the back of a soft landing, falling interest rates with falling inflation, you know, absolute Goldilocks scenario. That's priced into the market. So where to from here? You know, if we do thread the needle and actually get this soft landing and get lower interest rates, 100% it could keep going up. It just feels like the risk rewards now a little bit tilted towards that scenario where it feels like there is a lot of the forward interest rate cut expectations to come out of the market if we do go along that path. You've had a few signs of, you know, hawkish data coming out over the last week or two. So, you know, that's up for debate in there. I think that's the big thing is what does the landing look like? We're priced in a soft landing, so, you know, there is risk to that. I guess that's my take. So the outlook is highly uncertain and very path dependent, and there's multiple paths. So highly uncertain environment at the moment.
So you mentioned interest rates numerous times. You know, what do you think will happen? When are you expecting the first cuts in Australia?
So I think the first cut will be second half of the year. I think it's going to be, again, it's very much of a guesswork at this point in time, because the reason why I hesitate is it's either going to be late in the year or it's going to be quite soon, because we've had two really weak job reports in Australia in the last 2 months. So that's where I'm torn now. You've got inflation expectations picking up globally, but the Australian labour market is a key swing factor here. If that deteriorates for another few months, we could actually go early. But my base case is now August, September, around that period, I think.
So we're going to come back to you around that time. We'll look at it again. So let's talk about listed investment companies. Obviously, I'm a huge fan. But in terms of the LIC market at the moment, it's been a really tough couple of years. But I think there's been a bit of a clear out. And of course, some takeover bids, and obviously one by your fund. Explain the rationale there to us, and what's your outlook for LICs generally?
Well, I think LICs, you know, they're very cyclical. They go through periods of discounts and premiums, which some people love, some people hate. So at the moment, the way we look at it is generally when there's an alternative form of income and we're getting that now with cash and term deposits, naturally you think there'd be a bit of shifting of money. So some people are saying this is the death of LICs. You know, they're old. You've got all these new products that those benefits we talked about, premium and discounts, are actually create opportunity. So other vehicles are always trading at NTA, and you're really buying just at the fund level and you get the performance, whereas you can actually trade around the fund's performance within the LIC structure. So that, I don't think it's the death of LICs, as some people are calling it. It's very cyclical. And let's just see where LICs are when EV interest rates are much lower over the next 2-3 years, because they could go to large premiums.
So you've just agreed to come on as a Future Generation Australia pro bono fund manager, and we are incredibly grateful. Why are you doing this?
You look at the impact Future Gen has had on society, and, you know, if this wasn't started back in the day, you know, obviously Jeff was instrumental in starting this. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, we could be into the $70-80 million of donations. And you just think about the impact it's had in society. And it's a tremendous benefit. You know, a healthier society is a better one for all. So what I can do is donate some of my time, which is doing this job anyway. So for me, it's a no-brainer just to be involved and try and help and grow that pool of donations to go back into society.
We have 18 fund managers within Future Generation Australia, and they've all got in different investment styles and strategies. So what do you bring to the table?
What we bring to the table within, you know, the WAM Leaders product, I think, is really around process and also, you know, taking a more of a global look on how we apply investment within Australia, and a very active role as well. Like, we're a very active fund, and we've got that mentality is every day you come to work, go, how can we make money today, rather than buying stocks and waiting for them to, you know, re-rate, or, you know, waiting for a catalyst to drive them up. We do all that, but then we're also every day, how do we make the money work as hard as it can? And that's what we strive to do every day. So I think it's that more holistic approach, and then that very active component as well, trying to drive those returns.
So one of the things that really fascinates me is how you as a fund manager goes about selecting a stock. So how do you manage your process? Because you were saying before that you're very active. What does that mean?
We could talk for hours here. So let's try and keep it high level. So how do we pick a stock? Essentially, it can come from a multitude of factors, but generally it's working out where to hunt, and where to hunt is formed by forming a macro backdrop and a forecast of where we think the economy is going, and then also looking at where is money being directed currently and where could it potentially be directed to in the future, and then also doing the very much bottom-up stock picking. So seeing the company, seeing the management, talking to competitors, and then trying to combine them all. And the gold scenario is when you have all of them aligning at one point in time, but that quite often doesn't happen. So we have a little bit of a contrarian nature in us. So we're always looking for stocks that are unloved and sectors that are unloved. So it's trying to get evidence that there is an inflection point coming up. And I mean, that's generally how we look at things. We're looking for that inflection point backed up by data.
And so give us an example of one of your favorite long-term stocks.
Yeah, okay. This is a tough one. So a long-term stock, which I say tough one because, you know, we have that very short-term mentality on adjusting the portfolio weights. But if I was looking, I got a couple still out. This reporting season, actually, Treasury Wines and Aurora, both in the alcohol sector. So I guess if we touch on Treasury Wines, the one thing with the business is you don't want a business you can replicate easily. And you look at Treasury Wines and you just look at the brands they've got and the vineyards and all the arrangements, you can't replicate that. They've gone through a bit of a tough period with the China tariffs, which will be unwound in the next few months, we hope. So they've gone through an incredibly tough period. They've redirected all their volumes. If China does open up, they get to push all their volume through back through China, and then they could lift prices. So for me, it's long term, we can't replicate this business. And also in the short term, there is actually a positive re-rate opportunity. So that gives you a little bit of both there. You've got the short term and the long term. So I think ultimately it's down to, can you replicate this business? Is that hard to do? And if it's hard to do, it's generally a good company.
And what was the other stock you were?
Aurora was the other one. So Aurora is, they make a lot of the wine bottles, and they bought a business in France which makes bottles for, you know, like Grey Goose and some of the high-end decorative glass. And again, they've had 2 years of double-digit volume decline, and they've been growing their EBIT. So it just shows you how good management are and all the levers are pulling. So if they get volume for this business, this looks like a fantastic business. So, I mean, that I think over the next 5 to 10 years will be worth a lot more than that.
And is it gut instinct or is it data-driven, as you mentioned before?
Yeah, it's part art, part science. Really, the science is around data, fundamentals, but quite often stocks drift around fundamentals. So, I mean, back at the days of university, you thought, oh, if I could do a spreadsheet in a certain way, will I unlock all this value? I can pick stocks. It's like, that's totally false. Stocks fluctuate around fundamentals, and you need to be aware of what's driving stock prices. And quite often, it can be from a macro point of view, it's liquidity, credit spreads, and then, you know, narratives, because stock market is, by definition, a very uncertain environment. So by human nature, people like to anchor themselves to things. So in an uncertain world, if you can find something which explains something, everyone gravitates towards that. So you're always trying to work out what are people gravitating to and what will they gravitate to next. And that will drag you away from fundamentals. So you're always trying to, that's where the art comes into it. what will people think of next, and what is the likely next trend people will try and capitalize on and then overbuy basically?
So you just mentioned university. What do you wish you knew then that you know now?
I think it's really around that fundamentals. So fundamentals drive everything in the stock price. It's sort of like a bond where you've got all the cash flows. You think, oh, I'll build this DCF and I'm going to, you know, it's a silver bullet. I build this spreadsheet. Now I can buy this stock and no one else has done it. But the market price is just a reflection upon everyone else has done the same processes. So it's trying to discover another X. So I guess for me, it's what did I wish I would know? That fundamentals don't drive everything. And there's a whole other aspect to investing.
So when you look at other investors, whether they're mums and dads or the good and the great, do you think they often get fundamentals wrong or do they have an understanding of them?
I think fundamentals are generally understood. I think it's the greed and fear which gets people carried away. So, and it's buying into those narratives, which often you see once it's in the newspaper, it's pretty well in the price and then people start talking about it and it's really just maybe ignoring the fundamentals. Is you got to be aware of the fundamentals, but you've got to ignore it to a point. But then there's a point where gravity bites, and I guess it's always that people love the win. It's like at a casino, you know, it's a house's money, it's free money, so their risk appetite goes up. But maybe that's risk management. That's probably the key.
And which investor do you most admire?
Yeah, for me, it's the global macro guys. So Drucker Miller is always a fan favorite of everyone, really. I mean, he's the ability to break things down in the most simplest form. He speaks very well. And then you look at his track record, it's just unbelievable. And again, that's around risk management. And when you find something, you know, be as greedy as hell when you find that opportunity. And I think you learn a little bit from George Soros around that. He's like, I remember listening to him. He's like, you used to put bets on. Then George goes, well, how confident are you? And he goes, very. And then George would like multiple size his bets. So I guess for me, they're the most important people that I look up to.
I like to ask this question in terms of what do you read? Where do you get your investment ideas from?
From every source, but Twitter is an incredibly valuable resource, I find. As long as you can sort through the junk and filter them out. But for me, there's some really smart people on there. And it's not really stock ideas. It's just thought process. So in this business, it's about information, processing that information. And for me, Twitter is a great resource. You get all the news flow. You get people's opinions, industry experts. I think it's a great first place to start. But all it is to me is like, you know, watch Bloomberg TV all the time and try to avoid CNBC because it's a little bit on the hype side, whereas Bloomberg is a lot more fact-based. But yeah, it's just like everything in life. If you want to be good at something, you've got to surround yourself with the information at all times and keep reading and, you know, you've got to go all in basically.
And what's the best question any budding investor can ask of their companies?
The one I always ask is around just run through the what was good and what was bad over the last 12 months. And it just opens up the conversation and sort of like instead of, you know, having very direct questions, it's a very conversational way of opening up a meeting. And you get quite a lot out of those questions because it's always what's front of mind on the person. So it's always trying to lead companies, I guess, like you try and present a positive point of view and see if you get pushback. And it's just a bit of a game there on having the meetings just to see what's front of mind on people. But generally, that's what I do.
Matt, I've really enjoyed this chat and getting an insight into your whole investment process. Thanks so much for your time today. And also, thank you in advance for the work you're going to be doing for Future Generation to make sure we can keep on giving. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please join the Future Generation family, Australia's first listed investment companies to provide investment and social returns. We are proud to have given more than $75 million to Australian not-for-profit organisations. You can be part of this and gain investment returns while contributing to improving the lives of young Australians. For more information, please visit our website, www.futuregeninvest.com.au.